So I think what our TAs and definitely our first year students made explicit for us is that what still matters is words on the page.
Mm-hmm.
Remember how we talked to our GTAs about the podcast?
Not really.
Well, we legitimated the writing of podcasts with the writing of the script.
Yeah, okay.
So the students were composing with sound, but really it was helping their alphabetic writing. So, for example, in an explanation to our GTAs, we wrote, creating a podcast demands a great deal of script writing, i.e. text on a page, that not only gets students planning and writing essay-like explorations and arguments, it also gets them revising that writing.
Yeah, so we privilege words on a page.
Well, it's not done yet. No. Put simply, writing on the page and audio recording that writing surfaces obvious problems with writing on the page.
Mm.
And in my 101 classroom, I said things like, you're writing a script, though, to connect podcasts to the real work of writing.
Yeah, me too.
And here's the thing. Approaching audio as if it's only in service to writing words on a page still seems to align with lots of dominant thinking in our field. And that kind of bothers me. Like in Cindy Self's historical look at the field on sound and writing, she says...
You mean movement of air, the breath of meaning?
Yeah, yeah. She writes that composition classrooms, and I quote, can provide a context not only for talking about different literacies, but also for practicing different literacies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, so we both agree that like students can practice with sound and words on a page. They're different literacies.
I know. Just keep listening, though. The practicing distinction matters for Self in particular, because usually when multimodal works are included in composition classrooms, they act as cultural artifacts or texts that students study and critique, but not the kinds of works that students actually produce.
Hmm.
So I'm concerned about where we seem to land at the end of her article regarding the use of audio, which really seems to keep sound in service to words on a page.
Okay,
so clearly in the 20th century, like her article's dealing with, orality took a backseat to writing, for sure. But has that actually changed?
Yeah.
Composing in audio is different than composing with audio in a script.
Okay, yeah, I think you're right. Composing with anything other than alphabetic text printed on a page does certainly seem to take center stage, even in texts like Self's. She clearly wants to privilege something otherwise.
Right.
So like Self and Takeyoshi say, why should writing teachers, and particularly, I'll add, new GTAs, teach composing modes other than alphabetic text and composing practices? Words on a page. They both write. And I'll quote too. Shouldn't we stick to teaching writing and let video production faculty teach video? Art and design faculty teach about visual images. Audio production faculty teach about sound. So again, you're right, but Self knows you're right. Like in describing the long-standing constellation of forces that privilege words on a page above all other composing practices is the profession's ongoing bias toward print. A bias that has as much power now as it did when Patricia Dunn reminded us that it seems absurd to question an overemphasis on words in a discipline whose reason for being is, like no other discipline, for and about writing, words on a page. Writing is all about words on the page.
Okay, yeah, we teach writing, but as our communication technologies continue to move and morph, writing also gets implicated.
Well, sure.
So instead of saying we teach words on a page because that's the origin and the reason our field exists, it might actually be useful to tether our writing pedagogy to new communicative practices that potentially resist letting a dominant discourse's devotion to text on a page trump a diverse and different one.
Huh. I don't think Cindy is saying that.
Well,
we shouldn't.
She's not. But what I mean is that in teaching sound, visual images, video, text, etc., we provide students with broader rhetorical awareness of and a greater ability to choose various composing modalities.
Yeah, that's right.
So in that history, she writes, though, that all of these modes continue to be in service of writing words on a page.
Mm-hmm.
And reading Self actually makes me see the limitations in our own thinking about composing with sound. The way that we legitimated sound, the way that we talk to our GTAs and our 101 students, the other modes are always used with usefulness for the page. Hmm. So when we do that, we don't actually represent a both-and approach, like Self is arguing for. Alphabetic text writing remains what we do.
Okay, I can see where you're finding that in our approach for sure. I just think that in Cindy's history of sound and composition, she does try to distance herself from putting audio projects in the service of words on the page. It's nuanced. It's just that Cindy is trying to find a way to privilege a different mode of composition, but she has to account for that constellation of forces against her. You know what I mean?
Can we just call her?
Yeah, okay.
Hi there.
Hi, Cindy.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, but you're
for those of you who may not know, this is Cynthia Self. She's a distinguished professor at Ohio State University, and she's spent most of her life focusing on the digital environment and its relationship to literacy.
See ya, life is sweet.
Okay, so we've got a weird little argument going, and lots of retconf thinking, and even in your article where you talk about the history of composition and sound, I'm concerned that audio seems to always be in service to alphabetic text in writing classrooms.
Okay.
So in our program here, we invented a podcasting project for our first-year writers, and what we really wanted to do was privilege audio as a kind of writing.
Yes.
But then I realized that the way that we explained it to our first-year students and to our graduate teaching instructors was to say that in making a podcast, it was going to help the students' actual text-based writing. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, and I mostly agree with Shannon, but it seems to me that you connect audio to alphabetic text because it feels like you have to. Our field is so committed to words on a page that it's impossible for you to even write an article without connecting audio to alphabetic text, right? So our disagreement is pretty nuanced, but it feels important because we're feeling a lot of tension from our GTAs and even our first-year students.
Yeah, I sort of think you're both right, though, I have to say, and I'll tell you why I say that. First of all, no one misses the irony of an article about sound that's presented in writing, right? I mean, that points to the fact that we're privileging the alphabetic print essay, and the fact that three C's couldn't, there was no other way that they could represent that piece except as an alphabetic print essay. And in fact, the audio essays attached to that essay could only be included because I've kept them up in various websites over the years. So I think in some senses, the piece is a captive of print. But at the same time, Jeremy, I think you're right in that what I was trying to say was that the privileging of alphabetic print really is built into our consciousness, our professional consciousness, and that we don't have to let it be so. I mean, print is like a little machine that keeps replicating the effects over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, I think you're right in that respect. But then there's a third respect, I guess, and that has to do with the, the systematicity of first-year composition.
Oh, right.
Or composition programs, and how most programs feel that they're caught in this, in an expectations game, both within the university and in terms of parents and employers and community, et cetera, et cetera. And they feel that having too much emphasis on something like audio might jeopardize the endeavor that gives them value in the eyes of the university, in the eyes of the community, in the eyes of the culture. So I think everybody's right.
Well, yeah. The reason we wrote to our graduate teaching instructors to help them think about teaching podcasting in terms of writing was because of the resistance they were getting from their students. A lot of the first-year students didn't want to do the project, even though they thought it was fun.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, students are not dupes. They're not. They know what is considered the intellectual work of the academy, and they know the privileged position of print, and they know that what they're paying for in terms of their tuition dollars is some facility with the privileged modality, intellectual modality of the academy, which is print.
That's right.
So, you know, I don't blame them, I guess.
I mean, Cindy, isn't it crazy that we're still having this conversation about what counts as writing? Feels like people have been defensive forever. You know, like in 93, I remember Erica Lindemann said that the teaching of composition should offer students guidance and practice in the discourses of the academy and the professions. I mean, i.e. written discourses. Remember, she said we have particularly should do that because we drag every freshman through the course. And then like somewhere around 2004, Thibault, you know, shared similar sentiments about the responsibility writing pedagogy should take up in technical writing, which is more often tethered to new communication technologies. I remember she said we should ignore whatever rhetorical theory is currently in vogue and focus on practical instruction.
Right.
Such as organizing effective written arguments and proposals so as to prepare graduates for careers. So it's crazy to me we're still having the same conversation.
Oh, no. Nah, it's not crazy. I mean, I just think that it's an indication of how potent the ideology surrounding print is. Once you start talking about this and show them examples, people sort of, they snap to it, but you know, it takes a while and they have to believe that you're trying to act in their best interests. And that, I think, takes some discussion and trust. And
what's surfacing here, too, is an evaluation about usefulness, which is incredibly important when considering how we equip our students in an increasingly networked and deeply mediated world like ours. And like Cindy, like you're saying, the value behind this judgment is tied to a belief that written text on a page is still the primary or most useful way of communicating.
Oh, yeah. Why is it that in composition classrooms, we can't bring ourselves to talk about anything but print composition? So to me, it's the inclusion of the audio essay that allows us to break out of that mental box and that gives us an opportunity to engage students in another modality that might better suit their gifts or their talents or their interests, and certainly expands their way of understanding what composition can be. Now, if that is, I think the mark of how difficult a move that is the amount of fear and resistance that you get in return from suggesting an assignment like that.
So the difficulty Cindy names might have to do with the tension that comes about when students can't rely solely on literacy practices for English class, even when they don't necessarily know what those literacy practices are. They just feel the tension.
Yeah, composing in audio then might both help students think across what they already know from English class and also acquire new ways into engaging and producing knowledge.
Mm-hmm.